the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
Because they raping everybody out here.
Should a Jewish baker be required to bake a Nazi wedding cake?
Millionaires and billionaires.
Yeah, how about that?
It feels kind of like we're up the creek.
Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry.
I'm the boss. How about that?
And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down.
Well, I'm not a crook.
If we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
Had your kids, had your wife.
Whole binders full of women.
You just got to keep on paddling.
You know, I got talking blood, man.
Streaming stuff going on the internet.
We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Welcome to Up the Creek.
Okay, we're recording. Lumber is so expensive.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It was $300 just for... Hold on. This damn thing. I rearranged this, so like the main studio out there, and then I've got this room for like this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And just for like work, it's the office area, I guess you could call it. And so anyway, I've never really done anything in here, like this wise, so I'm trying to get it set up. But anyway, so lumber, went and bought wood for the trailer earlier today. So last weekend, I started ripping it off, you know, after I grabbed it from you, and I thought it was just gonna be like three or four boards, because I looked them up and treated it as a 2x10x16. They're $31 a piece, so I was like, you know, like I don't want to. I mean, yeah, ideally I would just go buy all new, you know, lumber, but at $31 a piece, I was like, I'm not gonna do that. I'll just replace what's rotten, and we'll go from there. So I took off. There was three, and then I was like, ah, there's four. This one's kind of rotten, too. So I took those four off, and I was like, okay, it's not too bad. Still a lot of money, but all right. But then I get to looking. I'm like, well, this one's rotten on the side. So I take a screwdriver, and I'm like jamming it, you know.
Yeah.
That's not going to fucking work. It's rotten. There's five. And then I take that one off, and I'm like, well, the other one looks kind of bad. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to crawl underneath this thing and just take a look. So I crawl underneath, and, like, they're all rotten. What the fuck? You know, like, so I just ripped them all off, and it's like, if I'm going to do it, I'm just going to do it. Spend the money. Then I got to thinking, so that trailer's only 4 years old. I bought it, actually, in April of 2020, and it was a brand-new trailer. So if it was, if it used treated lumber at 4 years old, it should not be rotted. I'm guessing they did not use treated lumber. There's no way. I mean... That little toolbox thing, I had it on originally, okay. I mean, you could say it was holding moisture in, but even at treated lumber, it never should have done that. But there was rot in the back of the trailer. There was rot along the sides, in the middle, so it wasn't that. It was just, they used regular lumber, which, you know.
Probably.
Sunlight, water, rain, snow, you know, over the course of 4 years, sure, it's going to destroy it. So hopefully this time it lasts a lot longer, because... All in all, I end up ordering when it, sorry, went to Lowe's. I bought nine, but this is kind of weird too. So they're 2x10x16. I went to Lowe's. And I get when you buy, you know, treated lumber, like it's a little swollen, right? It'll shrink down a little bit. But I bought, I counted, there's nine. So I took nine off. They were like 2x9. Okay.
Right.
And, which makes sense.
Smaller.
Right. But. So, when I was loading up a Lowe's, I just loaded it up, like, on the floor, like it would be. And, because I, you know, when I ripped all the, there was no wood when I took to Lowe's earlier, it's just a metal frame. And only eight fit, and there was, like, 6 inches left. I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. What the fuck? So, I ended up going back into Lowe's, just returned one, because I need it, I got to use it. And I just went and bought a 2x6. And I'll just put 4 2x10s on the outside and the 2x6 in the middle. I don't know if it's going to shrink up over the next, you know, I don't know, few months. And I guess maybe
if it one in the middle, you won't notice.
Well, I was like, you know what? If they do all shrink, I'll just unscrew them, move them all to the side. I'll go buy a 2x10. I'll stick it in the middle. It'll be good.
Right.
I just thought it was kind of weird, but I did find out. I only bought 8. I only paid for 8. So,
oh, nice.
I was like, yeah, fuck you.
It's the little victories.
Yeah. I was like, ah. Wife, we get back in the truck, and she grabs a receipt, and I was like, you don't want to see that. Because, you know, I'm thinking like $300. And she goes, why? Because you got one for free? I said, no. I said, because the price. What are you talking about? She goes, you only paid for 8. And I'm like, oh, fuck. All right. I guess I got one for free. And that was after I returned the other ones. I returned a board I never bought. I mean,
yeah,
it is what it is. Sorry, Lowe's. You guys messed up.
Yep, it happens.
But really, a $31 a piece, that's just stupid. There's no, you know, this kind of going to segue into the supply chain inflation conversation. Because on the way home, some guy on the radio was like, I went to, you know, I went to the store last night and I bought this, and it was $75. And you guys can't,
right.
You know, mid-pandemic, they say supply chain issues, but it's clearly not supply chain issues still. It never was supply chain issues. You know, lumber, remember back in the height of COVID, the lumber prices went through the roof, and they've lowered a little bit, but it's still $31
right.
for a piece of wood. And it's a large piece of wood, I'll give you that. But $31 is just unreal. And, you know, supply chain issues, quote-unquote supply chain issues. And yeah, I understand during the pandemic there definitely was, because a lot of shit shut down. But I think it's the, you know, inflation slash a lot of these places are like, well, you know, what's the point of lowering prices, right? Like,
right.
Any capitalist isn't going to just, I mean, if the people are still buying it, the market is still buying your product, you're not going to just voluntarily lower those prices back to what they used to be if people are right. continue to buy. You lower your prices when people stop buying it. So, you know, you right. have to go, you know, make up for that. Well, people never stop buying wood. I mean, I just spent, you know, $300 on fucking wood. Just a little observation I had on the way home. Just got thinking about it a little bit. It's like, okay. Well, you guys are fucking assholes, but what do you do about it?
Yep. Yeah, so I had started retrimming some of our bedrooms and some windows and stuff around our house, and then we stopped, just got sidetracked on other things or whatever. So I still have about, you know, a good half my house that I need to go finish retrimming to make it all match.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been one of the hangups, is because when I did a lot of that other stuff, it was, you know, in the before time, pre-COVID. And then, yeah, the cost of all those boards just like tripled. And so it's like, oh, wow, this is an investment now. It was just like a hobby that wasn't that big of a deal, right? Because it's just little trim.
Yeah.
You know, we're just doing like the craftsman style. So it's just like little pine boards or whatever. But right. Yeah, it's crazy what that stuff costs.
It is insane. I last summer, you know, because we moved in the house last summer or summer before. I don't remember what it was. But I fenced in that little area for my dogs to shit. And I was like, I'm going to do it right. I'm not going to buy 4x4s and just the fake. They have fence pickets. They have, like, you know, cedar fence pickets. Then they have the ones that are cedar look-alike or whatever. And they're just treated like pine. But I just said, fuck it, I'm going to do it right. And it's not a large area at all. But I bought the metal postmasters to go in the ground. And I bought all cedar 2x4s.
Right.
And then I bought cedar planks. And I mean, that little area I did, it was like $1,200. And it's, I don't know, 20, a 20 foot, like, you know, fence with like two gates at each end. And so, you know, if I did the whole yard, you're talking like 10 grand. That's just insane amounts for like a piece of wood like cedar. Because cedar is more expensive because it is naturally weather resistant, and, you know, it doesn't have to be treated and it lasts, and which is great wood to have, but it's right. It's just crazy, like, because again, like, there shouldn't be a reason why this is that expensive. And but I'm still out there doing it, and so is everybody else. So again, these companies are not going to go lower their prices,
right? You know, it's got to be, I mean, we both have pretty good jobs even, right? We're in our 30s, so it has to be kind of, man, it's got to be depressing to be a younger person starting out now. I mean, I guess you don't really have a frame of reference, right? Because I guess if you're, you know, early 20s or whatever, just getting into this stuff, this is just kind of the way things have always been. And I guess now we sound like old people, but oh, back in my day. But
right,
man, the cost of things, like rent, and you know, a lot of like these duplexes and apartments and stuff that are going up is significantly more than my house payment.
Oh,
right,
so much.
And that's even before you get into the whole interest rate thing on getting a house to begin with. It's crazy.
You know, Hayesville is putting in some quote unquote high end quadplexes or whatever they are, and it kind of makes me laugh because the rent's supposed to be like $2,000 a month or something, but that's not even in today's, you know, that's normal rent. It might be a little bit more than normal, but I mean, still a rent for a house. Well, let's say like a 3-bedroom, you know, 2-bath or 1-bath house here where we live is still probably $1,000 to $1,500 a month, and $1,000's on the really shitty end. Like, it's not even a nice place.
All I can figure is there's a lot more people that want kind of that,
well,
urban vibe or whatever, you know.
I think there is something to it. So there's a guy that used to work for me, and super cool guy. He's been at the same place we've been for a very long time. So I know he has to be making decent money, unless he's just stupidly irresponsible with his money, which is common. But I would think at this point in life, like, you know, he's our age, he would, you know, own a house. It's just, right, it's the American way. You buy a house. Well, this guy's like, no, I rent. He's like, I don't want to own a house. Really? Yeah. I just don't want to have to mess with the maintenance and stuff of it, you know?
Sure.
So then there are a lot of people out there like that. They just don't want to, something in my house breaks, I got to pay for it. Right, hot water heater goes out, I got to pay for it. I'm renting a house, hot water heater goes out, landlord, come fix my shit. Okay, so I do get that, how a lot of people just don't want to have to fuck with that. I like owning my own thing. I mean, I guess I don't own it. The bank does, but still, you know.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. And you could still rent places, you know, like even where I've got a little bit of land and stuff. But I guess, you know, I'm not one to get crazy into like investing and like smart money management and stuff like that. You know, I'm completely retarded when it comes to that. But the house is still kind of a savings account, you know, not necessarily growing much, but it's always going to be worth something.
Right. It's worth more than what you bought it for.
Yeah. Shit hit the fan, or I fell on my face, or, you know, something. There's enough equity here. You could go get, you know, the home equity credit or a second mortgage, or just sell it, cash out, and, you know, start over. Right. That's, I guess, the thing for me at this point is like, I would always want to own it because even though I spent all the money to get it, I can get most of that back out. Whereas the rent is just kind of a black hole. Now, obviously, you're rolling the dice on, well, what's the maintenance going to be and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't know that there's really a lot of money that goes into maintenance necessarily. I mean, most of the money that I've spent on things over the years has just been stuff that we've chose to do. Right, like
we're
doing the trim and things like that, as opposed to just, well, maybe we'll just paint, you know, and go for a little walk. Because it was, nothing was bad. It was just your taste change and your style. It's like having a hobby car, right?
Sure,
a lot of it.
You know, I guess so. When your house that you guys fully remodeled before you ever moved in, so it's kind of brand new, right? I mean, in a sense, I get the basement, the framework was still there, but you guys completely gutted that place and redid it all. And this house I built, so it's new, obviously. The maintenance is going to be less. I guess if somebody went out and bought a house that was built in, I don't know, let's just say the early 90s. No, I won't say that, because my last house was built in 1992. And we never had any real maintenance problems. The siding did need replaced in some areas when I moved out, when I sold it. That was it. At that point, the house was, I've been living here 2 years, 22, 21, because we lived at my in-laws for a year. So I lived there. So in 2021, so basically 1992 to 2021, the siding finally needed replaced. And that was the old style, like, I forget, it's not the cement siding like new houses use. They have a 30-year warranty. It's the older style.
Right.
So even then, a house that was built in the early 90s still didn't have much maintenance added to it. So, I guess unless you bought a house that was like, and some people are really into that, like a house down on, you know, the Riverside area that's, you know, was built in the 30s or 40s or 50s, whenever. It's probably going to need some maintenance. So, I guess whatever you're, look what you're getting into. If you were going to, if you were going to buy a house and your excuse was, I don't want to buy a house because of maintenance. Well, I don't know. Is that probably a good excuse? Cause you can, you right. can, you can find a house that's nice unless you're just one of them people that are, you know, stuck on that, that old style type place then.
Okay. Right.
But I don't know. But like you said, investment, I mean, we got, when we built this house, it was the crazy times of COVID, and I think we got, we did not like know what we were doing. We didn't like play the market or nothing like that. We just got lucky as shit. We still sold our house at a time where I, my old house, I made a shit ton of money. We really did. We just so damn lucky. We could have probably waited another month or maybe two and made a little bit more money, but I still stand by. I'm glad I sold it when I did. And when I built this house, which a lot of people were doing because at the time people were getting these crazy bidding wars over existing homes. And we looked at it. We wanted to build, but part of us was like, well, we don't want to live with the in-laws for a year. So we had looked, but I mean, people were there within days, not even days, hours, houses were
right
on the market. And it was these crazy bidding wars. And there people are making, I mean, 50 to 80 grand over their asking price, just insane amounts. And we're like, we're not going to fucking do that. We could build a house. We know how much money we want to spend, and we could get,
right,
we could customize it how we wanted it for the most part. There's options. And it's never been lived in. It's ours. We're like, all right, screw it. So that's what we decided to do that. I know other people that did. They were not so lucky because when we did it, builders were putting in the contracts. They reserved the right to assess the price at the end of the build to reflect the, you know, they said their, you know, rising cost of lumber, yada, yada, yada. Basically, because they were taking so long to build, they wanted to stay competitive in the market and they wanted to get their most bang for their buck. So
right,
most houses, at least pre-COVID, didn't take a year or over a year to build. So since they did, and things were so drastically different from this year to this year, if they would have locked in that, the price we locked in for, it would have been crazy, you know, different for a lot of people. Ours only raised $10,000, which was, yes, a lot of money, but there's my neighbors on this side, my neighbors on that side, neighbors across the street. I've seen those houses go through, you know, like three or four different buyers before someone finally locked in it because the prices kept going up so much. I'm not 10 grand. You're talking like 20 grand. We just happened.
No, I got a relative who was building a house, and the difference in his, he took a long time to build this particular house.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you know, there's some other stuff going on, but yeah, from the initial to, I think when they actually build it, the cost change was somewhere between like $70,000-$80,000.
That's just insane.
And most of that was just the materials went up. It wasn't like anything design wise changed significantly.
What was interesting, we did ours is you could see the trend on materials. In the beginning, materials are here, right? And then as we're waiting the year, materials skyrocket and we're like, fuck. And then that we watch materials drop down to the same, like within very close numbers of when we first started the process. So it's like, well, okay. Yeah, I get there's a spike here and you guys had to pay some more right there. But at the point of like framing, the framing wasn't done. So the lumber, it hadn't been purchased yet. We kept a close eye on all this stuff, you know? So we're like, well, their price really should stay really about where it's at. No, they still tried to make a little extra money on us. And they did. And at that point, it's like, we take it or leave it. We couldn't, there was no negotiation or anything like that. But anyways, we got lucky enough, locked it in. It was only 10 grand higher. So we just said, fuck it. We wanted to move out from living with the in-laws and we did it. And immediately, like I'm talking like within weeks of us buying this house, our house was already worth $50,000 more than what it was. So the investment thing we were talking about a second ago, like I didn't know what I was doing. I just got super damn lucky. So if I, you know, push came to shove and I had to go sell the house or take a home equity loan to make ends meet,
right?
I could, you know, I mean, it's very doable. And I would make obviously the 50 grand on it right away, plus the money that I put into it. And I could walk away with one hell of a check, which
right,
it's the investment. I mean, that's why I always looked at it too. Yeah, renting. Okay. All right. You don't have maintenance costs, but those small costs over the course of X amount of years, to me, the investment outweighs what those costs would be.
Yeah, for sure.
Because there is going to be a day when I do sell this house. I'm not. It's not our forever home, whatever you want to call it. It's going to happen. Where my idea is to go buy land, so I'm going to have to sell this to make money on it to go buy the land because land's expensive as shit. And yeah, anyway.
Yep.
So, what's new in your world?
Nothing, man. Been running a lot. Tired today. Sore. Beat up. I feel old.
How?
Other than that, man, I'm just glad the weather's warming up. I'm a very outdoorsy, warm weather kind of person, so it's been nice to finally get to be outside and start doing some yard work and things like that that I like. So,
how long have you been running, like distance wise?
So today was 4 miles. Sunday will be 8 miles, and then it slowly kind of trickles up. So during the week, usually run 2 days, sometimes three, depending on the week. I mean, it's usually between 3 and 5 miles per run. And then Sunday's my long day, and that'll eventually get up to the half marathon.
You just go down that trail near your house, whatever?
Usually, yeah. I go down the trail, or we go up to the county park or whatever. I'll go run around there sometimes, or just go run into town and run around and go from there. I tell you what is interesting though, is because not fitness guru by any means, you know, fat guy drinks beer on the weekends, but the end of last year I was lifting a lot more. In this year, the running thing, I haven't been lifting near as much, and the diet has also shifted. I'm still trying to do mostly protein, but I have like more cheat days because, you know, you're supposed to carb up more for running, I guess.
Sure.
And man, it's a difference. Like the rate that you atrophy, like strength wise from lifting when you have it lifted. I mean, it's only been not quite 3 full months into this whole, I'm going to do the running thing. Quite a bit below where I was even in like November from like a, you know, weightlifting perspective.
Yeah.
And then even things as far as like muscle tone and kind of just like flabbiness and stuff like that. I'm kind of ready for the running thing to be over because the lifting is superior. Like if you want to be in shape and like feel in shape and stuff, then more weight roomy, you know, if you want to do the HIIT stuff, whatever, I'm not saying I'll have to be like powerlifter stuff. Man, that's you'll get better muscle tone. You'll feel stronger. You'll be more flexible.
Uh-huh.
You'll just kind of naturally lose more body fat and stuff like that anyway, because you know muscles are anabolic. Running seems to be kind of more catabolic, right? Your body kind of eats itself.
It'll eat the muscles
a lot. Yeah, you know. Yeah. So that's been an interesting change. I mean, I feel great. I mean, cardio wise, I've never been able to run long distance at all, and I'm for my size, you know, 220.
Sure.
I feel like I'm moving pretty quick. So, I mean, that's all been good, but I definitely, it's different. They're definitely two different things, and it would be really hard to mix and excel at both of them at the same time. So it also kind of makes you see how, you know, some people that are just kind of naturally physically gifted, you know, pro athlete kind of thing, like, whoa, these people are freaks.
Yeah.
Granted, it's also their job, so they've probably got, you know.
You know, when I was in the Army, our PT test was always 2 minutes of push-ups, and you had to do a certain amount. There's like a minimum threshold, and then 2 minutes of sit-ups, and then 2-mile run. And you had, you know, everything was timed, and minimum set of push-up with it. And it was all based off like age group and yada, yada, yada. And there was the same thing with they time you on the 2-mile run. And, you know, the thing was like endurance. The PT test from the military, you know, it comes from. If you're ever in a you know, like a conflict, and you need that endurance if you got to run. But who the fuck is going to run 2 miles? Like, you're getting shot at, you just take off and run 2 miles. Like, it's not Forrest Gump. You're not going to do it. You're going to run. You're going to sprint to cover, and you're going to take cover, because that's what you're supposed to do if you want to save, you want to, you know, have the best chance of saving your life. So like, I get the endurance piece behind it, because the more long distance you can run, you do build up endurance. But you can also do that via like HIIT training, or, you know, lifting weights does build endurance. And
it's all about how you go about it. Like, you know, so, even when I lifted weights, I try to not rest a lot in between sets.
Yeah.
And if you want to build a lot of muscle, like bodybuilder stuff, that's actually not a good way to go about it. Like you build more muscle if you take a little bit longer breaks in between sets, but if you do it all quicker, it becomes more of a cardio workout.
Exactly.
Right. So you kind of dip a little bit in both worlds and you probably wouldn't be able to, I mean, running is its own thing. I mean, don't get me wrong, but yeah, you get just as much of endurance. Like if you're going to run at like a 9 minute, 8 minute mile pace for a long distance is one thing, but say you get knocked on the ground and have to wrestle somebody for, you know, an amount of time where the adrenaline's flowing. You know what I mean? It's its own kind of endurance.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I actually do know a lot about this stuff. Like you wouldn't, if you look at me now, you'd be like, that guy doesn't know anything about fitness, but there was a time in my life, you know, where that's what I live for. I gotta get back into it. I keep telling myself to get up a little bit earlier and just go do it. You know, even like 10 minutes, right? You got to start out.
Yeah.
Just 10 minutes. And I have Apple Fitness thing. And there's a lot of really good workouts in the Apple Fitness deal. And, you know, do some HIIT training. Or back in the day, when I say back in the day, in like 2009, I was in the Army. We were going to Hawaii for 2 weeks. So I was single. And you know, I was like, all right, you know, I want to be in shape for the beach, right? You know? So I did a Tabata. I don't know if you've heard of Tabata.
I remember when you were doing that.
Okay. It's a HIIT training, and it's, you know, you do 20 seconds of the workout, pick a workout, push-ups, sit-ups, running, sprinting, curls, bench press, you know, lightweights, obviously, and then 10 seconds rest, 20 on, 10 off, and you do it for a total of 4 minutes. It's a fucking phenomenal workout, and you don't have to have weights and stuff to do it, and that's what I did back then, and I ended up losing, because to your point, you said, you know, HIIT's more like cardio, you know, lightweight, no breaks, you know, minimal breaks, you know, high reps. You'll end up losing weight. I lost 54 pounds back then. I got down to 154. That's how I remember. You know, I was 54. Yeah. I lost 54 pounds, got to 154. The best shape I've been in probably my entire life. Better shape than when I was in basic training, when you are working out crazy. It was rough. But I mean, it was wild because I didn't run. And went to Hawaii, and we had to do a PT test for the Army. And I was like, well, just we'll see what happens, right? I mean, I knew I was going to be able to pass it because I always passed them. They're usually passing by, like, you know, very minimum. Because, I mean, it's push-ups and sit-ups, I was fine. It's always a run that kicked my ass. And, oh, my God. I knocked that run out with the fastest guy in our unit. And this guy was one of them distance runners who that's what he does. Is runs all the fucking time. Like his minimum runs like 10 miles a day or some crazy shit like that. And I did it. I was with him and he's like, what the fuck, Pickens? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, but it's weight, you know, doing the Tabata workout and building that endurance, but also staying in really good shape. Cause I had muscle mass on me and it's wild. And I should do it again. I really, really should.
Yeah, you should. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that anecdote about, you know, not having been doing a bunch of endurance running, but then, you know, we're doing fine.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I ended up on this kick of, oh, I should sign up to do a half marathon sometime. Cause I know a guy and he was kind of talking about it. So it had been on my mind. And when I was lifting a lot every day, I was like, I'll go for a jog in the summer while, you know, daughter rides her bike or whatever. And so I did it and I went a couple miles and felt pretty good. And then, you know, did it a few more times and then, one day I just did the Forrest Gump thing, got up, you know what, I'm just going to go run from my house to the, you know, the park and around and just keep going and see how I feel. And it ended up being, you know, a little over 6 miles, which I didn't know this at the time because I never really paid any attention to it, but it was like 10K, right? Because the Apple Watch goes, oh, you just ran a 10K. And I was like, oh, well, it wasn't really that bad. And it only took, you know, right about an hour or so. And I was able to get up and do that on like a Sunday morning. So I kind of made it just a, once a week or once every other week, you know, get up early on a Sunday before the family's even awake and go run for an hour. And that was my workout for the day. And I, you know, still just lifted through the week. And then, after doing that a few times, then got closer to holidays and, you know, everything kind of slowed down, but I was kind of like, you know, I could do that. That's only the half marathon thing is basically just doing that twice.
Sure.
And I was like, I could get up to that point, I think. And I can, and I don't, I think it'll be a big deal, but it's definitely a different kind of thing to try to get into it. Not in the thing with running versus the weight thing for me was it's a mental thing. Mm-hmm. Like physically it's really not that hard. I mean, anybody can go out there and, you know, lineman shuffle and run slow and go a real long way. It's a lot. I mean, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's just all a mental thing.
It's all
you tell yourself
mental.
You can do it, you'll go do it. And, but that's kind of the allure to me, because that has never been my thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any kind of running, you know, not even a mile, let alone, you know, multiple miles. But going over that mental hump was kind of satisfying in its own way, in a way that just lifting weights, I guess, hasn't been for me. Not that I don't enjoy it, but I've kind of always done that, you know, played football, had weights at my parents' house and weights here and things like that. And I know kind of my limits of where I want to go. And, you know, I've seen enough guys get injured and I've been hurt a couple times, just minor stuff, that I don't really want to pursue going super heavy and, you know, going like the bodybuilder powerlifter guy route. That's not really my thing. So I kind of have a zone that I want to stay in, and which is fine, but it's also kind of a, you get into that zone and say, like, oh, well, what else? Now you're just kind of in maintenance mode and it, you know, it's kind of, yeah, I'm gonna do something else.
Yeah.
So the running is a little different, because it's, I don't know.
Have you got
getting over that mental hump is nice. So.
That's very difficult. I struggle with that hard. The last time I ran seriously was during COVID. Got furloughed off work and was like, ah, I don't have nothing else going on. I'll wake up and I'll go run. And then I just would run, I don't know, a couple miles or so, a mile to two. And that was it. Because the mental thing for me, it's the toughest fucking thing.
Yeah.
And I've never been really a runner. And it's like the minute I start breathing heavy and stuff starts hurting, my mind's like, nope, you're done. I can walk for fucking days. But it's like the minute you start going a little bit faster than that.
So for me, it's right around like a mile and a half, not quite 2 miles, somewhere in there is where my legs and my breathing and kind of the first impetus of your body saying, dude, just quit, dude, just quit, dude, just quit.
Yeah.
But I'm at a point now where it's like, all right, shut the fuck up. You've done like a lot more than this, faster even, you know?
Sure.
And then, you know, right around that 2 mile mark, I don't want to say, you know, the idea of the runner high, the first little bit of that kicks in. Cause I think for me, it kind of goes in phases. And then, so from like 2 miles to like, you know, 4 miles or 5 miles, it will be pretty good. It's like being on autopilot. I can have a super consistent pace, you know, mile to mile and feel fine doing it. And then once you start to get around that 6 or 7, then it kind of, you start dragging again. And then I have only gone more than that a few times, but same kind of deal. You know, you might slow down for a little bit, but then you kind of even back out and like, all right, I can do this. I can pick up again and go again. So it's like keeps going.
I was wondering, so I have never experienced the runner's high.
I don't know that that's a good way to phrase it, because I hear people say that too. And I don't know. I guess what I'm thinking it is, what they're getting at, I understand, but it's not like a high where just suddenly everything goes away. But there is a moment where, like, you know, that for me, it's right around that 1.5, 2 mile mark where I'm like, oh man, my knee or my feet or my legs feel heavy or I'm tired or I'm breathing hard. All that stuff kind of goes away and the leg, you know, it's not bothering me anymore. I don't feel as heavy. You don't, it's not like that every day, but if that's what they're describing, right, and you know, kind of getting over that first month mental hump, and then you're just kind of on autopilot and your heart rate kind of levels out. Cause when you first start, you know, you're going from, you know, whatever your resting rate is to pretty close to a peak, usually, I guess, depending on how fast you're running. And then that's when you start getting kind of shitty.
Sure. Yeah.
And then once you get into your groove and your heart rate kind of settles down at wherever, you know, then that's when you start to feel a lot better.
Like those crazy runner people. And some of them like talk about like it's a real high. Like, you know,
I've heard that
they euphoric go off and like, yeah. It's yeah. I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, I'm eating fucking Cheetos. Maybe I just do not get that when I'm running ever. You know, I was listening to Joe Rogan yesterday when I was mowing, and he's pretty in shape, dude. Right. I mean, he says, you know, like the heaviest he lifts is 70 pounds. You know, yeah. Dude works out religiously every day, always talks about it on his podcast. And he's not, it's more of the, you know, HIIT training and stuff like that. He's like, I'm just trying to maintain. He's like, I'm not a bodybuilder. I don't want to be a bodybuilder. And so I guess it goes to show you, you don't have to lift crazy heavy to stay in really good shape. Because look at Joe Rogan.
No.
I mean, dude's right. late 50s, probably damn near 60, and he's in phenomenal shape. I should. I got to eventually. I just...
For me, the colder weather is always hard because I keep all my stuff out in my garage because I just like going out there anyway. And I got a heater out there and stuff to turn on and it's comfortable. But I'm a sweaty fat guy.
Yeah.
And I actually feel best when I'm sweaty. You know, I know there's a lot of people who don't like the heat or whatever, but man, if I can get outside, and like I don't mind it.
Yeah, I think we're pretty.
I feel better when I move water. Right. Like I can go out there in the summer and. Well, have a couple beers and mow the lawn and do whatever and come in and all right, I lost like 6 pounds of water today. And that's, yes, I'm thirsty and dehydrated. I get all that, but that's kind of normal for me to just be constantly going. Like I could go work out in my garage in the summer and, you know, come in 3 pounds lighter than I was, but going through that, right. Cause you replace all those fluids, but when I'm doing that is when I feel my best. In the winter, I'm unable to do that. So it's like, I just feel like everything has slowed down and it's just harder to.
I'm the same way because one, I sweat very easy and I don't mind being sweaty. Like it doesn't really bother me as long as I don't have to do anything important. If I'm just at home, that whatever, I'll be sweaty as fuck. We have a couple buddies who were the exact opposite. And,
right.
And they're very vocal about that. You know how they, I think one of them would, love to live. He talks about living in the Pacific Northwest because the temperatures and whatnot. I can't. I hate the cold. I did live in Arizona for a part of my childhood. It wasn't bad, you know. And it was hot. Bullhead City, Arizona. It's right in the middle of the Mojave Desert. It gets to be 120, 130 consistently. It's not humid, so it's way different. But it's still. It's like I would rather have that than have the fucking cold. Do not like the cold. I can't.
Yeah, you can always take clothes off, but you can't put them on, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, when it's cold, I go in the garage. You know, in this winter, there was a few times and it was like stupid cold. You know, negative temperatures. I try to go out in the garage and I'd work because I don't like to just sit inside either. I'm an outdoor. Yeah. I'm an outside guy. It kind of drives me nuts when it's especially when it's like nice out to just sit inside and watch TV. Kills me. I'd rather even if I don't do anything and I go to the garage or just go on the backyard and sit on the patio, but I'm outside at that point. So times this winter, it was just stupid cold and it was killing me because I couldn't even go in my garage and it was just miserable. And I don't like being inside. It just drives me nuts.
No, I'm same way. And you know, wife's like that too. We're outdoor people. Yeah. So, you know, towards the end of winter, it's, you know, we're more likely to start bickering about stuff or whatever, just because the claustrophobic insideness.
Yeah.
And, you know, winter, it only snows a little bit. You know, the snow days are fun because it's something different. You can go out there and do that, but that's only a couple times a year. And even that's, you know, a short term, right? Because you can't just stay out there in the snow forever because everything starts freezing. And then,
yeah, it just gets.
Can't do anything in the garage either because, you know, things are cold or your hands get cold. And, you know, just it's tough and it sucks. So, yeah, as soon as it's like 50, 60 degrees, I'm all about it.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other one too is, the hot. I mean, I guess I'm just kind of used to the hot. I kind of grew up outside doing stuff anyway. But, man, lakes and rivers, that's kind of always the thing is, shit, man, that time of year I'm swimming, I'm doing something, I'm somewhere.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, it's I just like the outdoors, like being out with nature. Like even if I don't have to go do anything, I don't have to go explore, I don't have to have anything in mind, just being outside makes me so happy. And you know, I know there are signs to that because the sun, vitamin D, whatnot. This winter weather kills me.
Yeah. I mean, today was kind of cool. We saw a bunch of deer. I had a bunch of turkeys going through our back pasture. And yeah, the other day I was out tilling the garden, did it barefoot because just the dirt felt good. And just,
hell yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
So my internet speed with my T-Mobile 5G home internet thing, according to speedtest.net right now, was 122.17 megabits per second.
I'm just curious. I'm going to do mine now.
Which is probably terrible compared to like cable or fiber internet, but it's,
well, we'll see.
Works fine for everything we do for the most part.
Hold on. I think I have the, oh, no. Well, I will say mine's a little bit quicker.
gigabit stuff.
No, it's not that fast. We don't have the highest plan for, we do have a, we do have, well, hold on. I'm going to try something. Did you, have a private relay, right? Cause you have the Apple.
I didn't have it on.
Oh, you don't
to be honest. To be honest, I don't know that I think the, cause Apple does it now as part of your.
Right. It most likely is just turned on.
Yeah. So I quit subscribing to the other one, but yeah, it should just default on. Right. So.
Yeah. So I'm going to turn mine off.
It only works in Safari though, doesn't it?
No, Private Relay works for everything.
It works for everything.
Mm-hmm. It's basically it's a proxy, but it's
right.
You know, sort of like a VPN. It just runs everything, your entire data stream through their server. So
yeah.
I'm gonna redo it and see if that actually, because I had it turned on. I just keep mine stays on all the time. Yeah, I don't have a VPN right now because of the Private Relay. I figured.
Right.
It's actually slower this time. Huh. That's interesting. Usually the VPNs are a little bit slower. Yeah. So the first time it was 246 megabits a second. This was 210. Well, it still says it's running through the Apple Private Relay, though. Huh. I don't know. That's weird. You know, they have a thing on Apple. If you have a website, you can set up a custom email domain.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And you can actually, use your web address without having to go through, because usually that service costs a significant amount of money, really. But Apple, if you subscribe to the Apple, which I have whatever the plan with all the shit, you know, and 2 terabytes of iCloud storage, and it's just part of it. I could have my own,
right?
You know, jeremy@whatever.com, and it just forwards it to your regular email address, which is pretty fucking cool. You gonna buy some Vision Pro goggles, whatever they're called?
You know, I got a coworker, and he's got the a Quest 2 and like a Quest 3, whatever one just came out.
We have.
And so I was talking to him about all that stuff the other day, and it sounded pretty cool. I've seen some stuff before, just, you know, anecdotally over the years that other people have had and whatnot. It looks cool. So I glanced at him at Wally World the other day. And I think if I was to jump into that, it would probably be the Quest, just because the, you know, there's games out there and stuff like that. And it's a little bit more casual oriented. I don't know that I would get into hard gaming enough to do much other than like a flight simulator, or maybe just a kind of a corny first person game to play once in a while.
Yeah.
But I don't know, the Vision Pro thing. I can't think of I struggle to find a use case where that would do anything. Like, I know the sci-fi, hey, you can overlay the internal schematics of the building that will update in real time as you look at it. And that's all things that are possible, but they're not there yet, and they don't exist yet. So until it gets to that point, I don't know that it really, what you do with it. It's just like having a laptop screen literally glued to your face is what it is.
It is. So we have the Quest, maybe the 2 or the 3. I don't know. We have one of them. Wife bought it here, I don't know, not too long ago. It's neat. There's like a roller coaster. There's some free games and stuff.
There was a roller coaster at the arcade here in town. Me and a daughter went to.
Yeah.
I don't know, a couple weeks ago. And dude, I felt sick at the end.
So I was just getting ready to say, I did the roller coaster. And in the quest, or the meta quest, you've got to set up your like zone. I forget what it's like, your space or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And it, if you like go to the edge, it'll show like a grid that's like a wall. So you know, hey, okay, I should back up. So anyways, I'm standing in the middle of the basement living room and doing the roller coaster. And I felt like I was going to fall over. And you lose all your senses. That is the weirdest thing ever. But at the end, I was sick to my stomach. I went to bed with an upset stomach. Like, you know, like a motion sickness.
And yeah.
It wasn't strong, but I was like, that's fucking crazy. All over just some things that were strapped to my eyes. There is a cool, like, first-person shooter game on there that's meta. It's kind of like, maybe like Fortnite. It's just a first-person shooter, kind of. It's kind of fun. I mean, it really is. Like, it's neat. There's some other stuff you can do with it. It's wild just how, like I said, all your senses just kind of go out the door. Like, you know, your balance and everything. I mean, it's nuts. But that being all being said, I don't see any use for the Vision Pro. Like you said, it's like a laptop strapped to your face. I mean, I guess you could have an unlimited screens, you know. All right, okay, whatever. But
yeah, the only other thing than that I can think of is like, so let's say I'm home, it's evening, daughter wants to watch some show on the TV, so she turns it on, and it's something that I'm not interested in. The wife is over in her corner, you know, crocheting or reading a book or doing whatever she's doing. So what do I do? Yeah. A lot of times I just sit there and just kind of mindlessly zone out to whatever, you know,
shows
Nickelodeon stuff the daughter's watching. Every so yeah, maybe they're Vision Pro. That's my own personal private TV space that I can just ignore everyone on the TV. But
you know,
but even that's kind of weird, you know.
So that's the thing too. It's also the bulkiness of the goggles.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not heavy, but they're bulky, and I don't like the way it feels on my head. It's like strapping ski goggles on, and on the Meta Quest, there's no augmented reality, you know, because that's part of the Vision Quest is you can walk around, and you can still see like normal. What with the Meta or the Quest, it has cameras on it, but it's in black and white. I don't think there's a way to turn it to color. I guess I haven't really messed with it, but. So, but it's not, it's only when you first like turn it on. Once you go into like the Meta Quest, like it's like a computer, right? You go into the computer, we'll say the desktop per se.
Yeah.
It you can't see anything. It's just completely, you know, blacked out world or whatever. So all in all, and the Quest is a lot cheaper than the Vision Pro. I don't recommend VR. It's like a novelty.
Yeah, it's just, well, you know, remember years ago when they were pushing the 3D TV thing?
Yeah.
Like, it's that. It's just that with one less step, because now there's not a TV on a stand. You're just attaching it to your face.
You know.
And movie theaters did the same thing. There was that whole thing kind of before COVID where it was, oh, the movie in 3D. And then they'd you know, go to the movie theater and there'd be one showing in 2D and like three in 3D. And the ticket's like $5 more to go have some shitty goggles or shitty glasses on your face that are blurry and scratched, and the whole movie just looks a little blurrier because the nature of the glasses, and it was just kind of sucked. And then that fad, luckily died. So did movie theaters, apparently. But
well, that's true.
That's kind of where all that is. Like, I get the gaming aspect of it and like how that could be cool. Or even if I'm sure someday they'll manage to make an immersive reality, like a movie or something where like you can be kind of in it. Like, I could see stuff like that being
choose your own adventure,
right?
Type thing.
But I don't think that's going to ever be you go about your whole day.
You know, I don't think until they can figure out how to make the goggles. Remember Google Glass? And it was kind
small of, like that, right? Literally a pair of glasses.
Yeah. And it was way ahead of its time. But if you can make it to where you put a pair of glasses on, no different than, no heavier than a pair of sunglasses or reading glasses.
Right.
And it's an augmented reality thing that can also turn into a virtual reality. You need, because people want both, right? If you can do that. Right. And I remember when Google Glass came out, it was cool. Like, I remember there's a video of a guy walking through like New York, And he was like, hey, Google, I want to do da-da-da-da-da. And a message would pop up, and he could reply back to the text message, and it would read it, and he could read it, or it would read it to him. It would give him, like, real-time directions, like, you know, like a GPS, like, you know, go this way.
Right.
This way. That was cool. It was neat. And obviously, it was a huge failure, and they didn't do much with it. But I think until we have something like that, it's just going to be...
The problem I think you even have with that task is, yes, on a head-up display, that's neat, but that's not superior to just auditory cues from a pair of headphones, which are everywhere now, because the headphones are light. Yeah. They're not in your way. You can turn on noise canceling or turn on transparency where it actually makes things a little bit more audible, right? Mm-hmm. You can take them out. The batteries last a long time. Why do you need to see the text message to read it if the computer can just read it to you, or it can just record your voice and, you know, transcribe a reply? Because now you're looking with your own eyes and you know where the streets are, and the thing can just tell you, you know, walk 100 feet and turn left on Spruce Street or whatever. It's just as easy and quicker, because now your eyes don't have to focus on the artificial thing in front of you. You're more engaged with the actual reality. So I don't know that the Vision Pro or any kind of an augmented reality for those types of tasks is inferior to just an auditory thing, you know. And then even some other stuff like let's say you have the you know, Apple glasses, they make them small. And so, you know, now you've got things like a compass or heart rate, or like you're running, you know, all the workout fitness stuff. You probably don't want that shit on your face while you're being active doing something. Something like the watch makes a lot more sense, because it's strapped, it's more secure, it doesn't have to be in your face, but it's just always there, kind of doing its own thing when you have a minute to go look at it, right? Sure. Rather than just bombarding your eyes constantly and being another thing you have to put on. And that's the other one too, is I don't wear glasses or contacts or anything. And, you know, a lot of people don't. And so you're asking them to do something else. I mean, they've tried putting, like, you know, speakers in sunglasses and little cameras and things like that. And it's just always been kind of, what's the point? Right. Cause it's just not a format that I think is the only app I can think of off the top of my head where the Vision Pro would be kind of cool, but would also die very quickly for me is, so like on my phone, I have one, I think it's called a Sky Guide, right? It's the one where you can, point the camera at the stars or whatever. Tells you what
I
they
have
are.
That. Yep.
Like, yeah, so that's super neat. We'll go out there and, you know, oh, look at this, or look, oh, that thing we see out there is a planet, or that's a satellite, or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's cool. But usually if we go do that, like if I go out on the trampoline in the summer with the daughter and we're just, you know, looking for shooting stars or whatever, we might use that app for like 5 minutes to look at like a thing or find this or find that. But once that's done, we're looking at the stars. I don't want to look at the computer screen anymore. I want to just look at stuff. And see shapes and see shooting stars. I don't need to stare at the cartoon Jupiter 100 times and read every little thing, you know. In the VR, I think it tries to put the information stuff a little bit too front and center. And what you're really after in those situations isn't the information, you're after the experience. And the digital stuff is getting in the way of the experience, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. That's a good way to put it. I was going to say something too, and I forget what I was going to say. You're talking about the headphones and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what I was going to say. Eh, whatever, don't matter. I think it'll be a long time before like a physical device such as a phone is replaceable. I mean, I think you're going to... They'll become foldable, like kind of like the Samsungs. And stuff, and I'm sure Apple's working on stuff like that, and eventually become thinner, you know, like the sci-fi movies where they pull out this like clear looking phone looking thing, and it's do do do, you know, it's all. I think we'll probably see more stuff like that before like the I know what I was gonna say. We're talking about this, but Ready Player 2 is getting ready to come out, so
yeah,
you could be very wrong, and so could I.
So I heard the book wasn't as good as the Ready Player 1 book. It was allegedly seemed more like just kind of a cash grab, but I don't know. I'm curious about that, because that movie was actually very fun. It's one of my favorite movies, I think, of the last
it was
quite
a
while.
Movie.
I mean, it was kind of a throwback to like a good 90s, early 2000s, like family PG-13 movie that everybody can watch and enjoy. without it having to be too heavy in any one thing or the other, and also without having to just be comic book hero 9000, which I'm not like anti-comic book movie. It's just it's getting very played out. Like every year it's there's this Marvel movie, then there's this Marvel movie, and then there's this DC movie, and it's just it's like, my gosh, can you guys like do something somewhat original? And I realize like Ready Player One is also a very like pop culture type movie, but at least it's clever, you know, and it's doing something that's more, because here we are having a whole conversation about, you know, VR, what it is or what it isn't, and that movie kind of takes all that on, right?
Yeah.
And that's interesting too, because even in the context of that movie, is something that we're seeing right now in our lifetime, you know, the VR. Well, what's the main use for VR right now? Well, really, it's just gaming, because I don't know that there's any like real world task that you could do. But people get so wrapped up in the game that the virtual reality kind of becomes a pseudo reality. And that's what, you know, PlayStation 3, they tried doing that with the whole PlayStation at home thing.
And I forgot about that.
The metaverse, you know, that those have all been attempts at achieving that and getting you to want to live more in this digital world. And I don't know, as things become more information centric, you know, maybe there will be more virtual reality type things like you could do that. I just don't know what all those things would be. Like, when you're going to have a virtual reality doctor's visit, how is the VR an improvement over a telephone if you're still not physically, you know what I mean? It doesn't add anything new. It's just kind of, oh, neat, here's your office. You know, like, there's those kind of limits.
Yeah, it's just like the, you can FaceTime your doctor now. What does it matter? Just make the appointment and go see him in person. But,
yeah,
I don't know. It'd be interesting. Or, you know, we're going to be like Idiocracy or Ready Player One, and that's the path we go down, and incels never leave their house, and, you know, you just stay in this alternate world every single day, and, you know, leave me alone because I'm baiting. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I could see that for, like, younger, because, you know, we've talked about it before in, you know, group settings and stuff, is, you know, video games when we were growing up, multiplayer was with somebody physically in the room with you.
Yeah.
And then kind of the original Xbox and, you know, the PlayStation 2 and all that, you'd link multiple systems together and have like a LAN thing, right? So your buddies would come over and you'd have two Xboxes, and now there's eight people in the room, you know, looking at the same two TVs, playing a big Halo party and stuff like that. And there was still a very immediate social aspect to it. Or like, you know, at home, I'm playing with my brother and we're just going to play Call of Duty for the next 4 hours till 2 a.m. or whatever.
Sure.
And then the online thing happened, and it's cool because it allows things to be a little bigger, but it killed the, and the craving for more graphics killed the immediate social thing. So now you're in this thing where people kind of shut themselves in a dark room and just harass strangers on the internet. Like it's a different kind of social thing. That's not, it's real, but it's not. Right. So the whole like kind of autistic incel thing takes over. And then, you know, now you have like the e-girl thing and all those kind of weird subculture stuff that comes with it's social, but it's not really social. Like these aren't necessarily bar friends that are going to show up, you know, when you're in trouble or you need help or you want something moved or, you know what I mean? It's just a different kind of relation dynamic. So I could totally see VR being like another layer of that, where it's so much more immersive that now you're even deeper sucked into that kind of rabbit hole thing. And some people can navigate that and it will be completely fine and not a big deal. And they will go on to live happy, healthy lives and be completely fine. And that's probably most people, but it will definitely, I think, suck down a greater share of people into just kind of the, you know, bitter incel shithole where suddenly you wake up in your, you know, mid late 30s and still kind of pretending that you're 20, right?
Well, yeah, there's that too. And you can, in a virtual reality world, you could become whoever you want to be.
Sure.
You know, so you got some nasty, creepy, disgusting guys out there that want to be a young teenage girl on their virtual reality world. And it's like, you know.
The thing that gives me hope though is the, like the metaverse sexual harassment stuff, you know, where just nobody really takes it seriously and it's all just a bunch of hilarious, you know, aggressive humor. And then, oh gosh, what was I going to say? AI, like, you know, there's been there's a lot of sci-fi books that have this kind of setting, you know, we make these like AI chatbots. Well, you know, somebody make one that's like stupid or like a villain where everything just fails. Like people have had those thoughts about, you know, ways to kind of rein stuff like that in, and it's, there's still hope.
Yeah. People don't disappoint. I know what I was going to talk about a second ago also. So when we were talking about the AirPods and stuff, you know, the audio, you know, directions and stuff, there's a company out there that's made an AI it's in a little device that's, you know, I don't know about the size of this tape measure, a little smaller, but you like clip it to your,
yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And it has a little tiny projector on it. So when you want to see something, you just put your hand out, but it's mostly for, you know, audio. And it tells you everything you need to know, and you can ask questions, and I want to, and it's kind of neat. It's very, very futuristic. I think it's probably way ahead of its time. I don't think the company's ever going to take off yet, because I don't think we're quite there. But it kind of reminded me of the Star Trek, you know, like, beam me up, Scotty, you know, kind of like deal. It's neat. I mean, if I had, like, all kinds of fuck you money, I would probably go buy one just to go fuck with it. But
sure.
I don't. So, anyway.
I can see phones getting to the point where, you know, think about how much electronic stuff is controlled in a car. And I kind of wonder about this on the direction, the Apple car that I guess they recently quit pursuing. But, you know, would there come a day where you have your phone or whatever, and your phone is literally the computer that does all of it? Like everything just becomes such an app that mm-hmm. you just have the electronic machine in your pocket that is the key and the brains to your car, or, you know, your house, or whatever, right?
Sure. I want to know when they build an operating system on like a phone, like Apple, but it's an AI, right? It's based around, like, you know, ChatGPT. They build an operating system around that. So it's a mobile operating system, but, you know, even Siri becomes, you know, an AI or something like that.
I think it's coming.
It definitely is.
You know, because you have the Apple Watch, right? You know, there's that watch face that's the Siri face.
Yeah.
And that's the whole premise, is that it, you know, changes things throughout the day based on, like, your habits and whatnot. So, right. Like, the nuts and bolts of how that would look, I think, are already being built if they don't already exist in a lab somewhere. I guess the difference would just be, would the AI be better at giving you what you want than you just tapping it yourself? You know, where would that line be? And that's I think an interesting conversation, because, you know, in light of like all the TikTok, you know, social media addiction stuff, you know, pushing you down rabbit holes without you knowing it, that would be the thing, you know, the ability of an AI or an algorithm that's made by someone to steer you down a certain path, right? So now if the AI is what's mm-hmm. not just serving you your goofy videos on TikTok or whatever, but it's
making decisions.
It's now doing your day and
yeah.
Not necessarily making the decisions, but it's giving you all the prompts. It's being the little devil or the angel on your shoulder that's nudging you one way or another. That's a interesting world too.
So, and at that point, when do you stop? I don't want to say not stop thinking for yourself, but there's part of you where you're just like, okay, well, this, I guess that's what I'm doing now, because the AI pointed you in that direction. And then then it goes into the conversation of like the Neuralink, you know, where there's AI built into that. And it's just, when do we say, oh, pump the brakes? But a lot of people embrace that, and they're looking forward to it. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, in the Matrix, there's the guy that was out of the Matrix who wanted to be back in the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's definitely that. And then in the book Brave New World, the people that don't live in the, you know, kind of globo homo superstate are referred to as the savages that live on reservations, but they're really just like regular people like you and me today that have houses and want to be a little bit more self-sufficient and not plugged into the Borg. But, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be our generation, especially, right? Because we're the centennials, right? The older millennials. So we're the last analog childhood that got to grow up in a world before cell phones and high-speed internet just completely took everything over. And I'm sure every generation has always said crap about the youngest generation, but there really is a difference now. And I think, honestly, just people who have to navigate or had to navigate boredom.
There's something
think differently than people that are just always goldfish brain onto the next thing.
Boredom also helps people with creativity. You know, you learn.
And you create a self. You yes. have a your own inner monologue, and yes. this is how I make decisions, and this is what I think about this. And then, yes, creativity, because how do I occupy my empty time, or how do I think about this? You develop your own psychology about things. And I think that's kind of why the Zoomer generation or whatever, there's more a kind of the incel autistic joke kind of meme thing going around, because there's a lot of that. And I see that every once in a while in doing job interviews and stuff. It's like they struggle with a lot of Q type things. And, honestly, if you look at kids today, or even the last time I was in college, like you're so, all the answers to everything are out there. Like if yeah. you want something, you just go get it. If you want to hear a song, you just say, play it. If you want to watch a movie, you just say, show me this movie, right? If you want this, you just go to the store and get it. You don't even have to make anything. Like there's no,
you don't even if have you to don't go to the
want
store
to
anymore.
Do anything or think about anything or pursue anything or solve a math problem on your own or whatever it is, you don't have to. And that's very dangerous for people to be in, because a lot of the time you're going to choose to do nothing.
Well, yeah, people want to be lazy. They're just naturally easiest way. I don't know. What's scary about that too is, so you get to a point where people quit relying on any sort of critical thinking or looking up information for themselves, right? So then whoever's in control can just, because you've learned to trust. Okay, all right, I'm going to rewind a little bit. So we'll talk about this, like the news, right? Well, there came to a point when our grandparents, and maybe our great-grandparents were, the news was the only, the news was there's just the news, right? So over those generations, you learn to trust the news, right? So people found out, okay, they're going to trust us no matter what. So they took advantage of the situation. Then mm-hmm. it becomes, it's not real news anymore. And it's just whatever somebody wants to say it is, but these people trust it no matter what, because when they first started watching the news, the intentions were not, evil. Well, now they become evil. So let's take the information and being able to, look up whatever you want right away. Well, these Zoomers, they trust it, right? Because right now there is, you can get on the internet and you can look up this math problem, look up this and look up this, and you can find the answer right away. Well, becomes a point when someone's going to say, they trust it, so much, and they can put what they want in there. It doesn't have to be the truth anymore. They just put their one in there. So then you've created another generation, three or four generations from now, maybe two generations from now, where no matter what, they just trust it, and then you're back into that cycle again.
Man, arguably we're already damn near there. I mean, the whole trust the science thing. I mean, how many people still can't, all the things we know about the bullshit that was COVID, and we don't even have to get into the vaccine thing. Like there's just so much out there it's just apparent now, but there's still people that are trapped in it, and they can't see their way out of it, even though it's slapped them in the face, right? It's completely sucked them in. Even some conspiracy stuff, which I find a lot of it entertaining, but there's probably more, flat earth and stuff now than there was even in the 1500s and shit. Right. Just cause I don't know. It's a dangerous time. And I would even say the post-truth stuff would get into the whole, the gender things. And, I think as a society, we've turned everything into a pathology, right? So now everything requires, well, this therapy, or you have this, or you're this way, so you should do this or that, when really what a lot of people just need is a healthy dose of suck it the fuck up, buttercup,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Technology's good, but technology can also be very, very evil.
Well, I think it's the technology's great. It's the will of man, right? Are you good or are you evil? Are you glass half full or is it glass half empty? And whichever path is the easiest, which a lot of times tends to be the shittier one. There's always somebody out there with their hand out trying to make a buck and rip a guy off, which is just kind of the nature of nature, to be honest. So
yep. Well, you want to end it there?
Sure. That's what hour?
A little over an hour, yeah.
All right, man. I'll
talk to you. Yeah, I'm going to get
running at you long enough.
All right, talk to you later.
See ya. Yeah.